The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Order, please. We have reached the time appointed for question period. The committee will now rise and report its business to the House.
Chair of the Committee on the Whole House will now report
that the Committee of the Whole House on Bills has met, has made some progress, and begs leave to sit again.
Thank you. We'll now move on to oral questions put by members to ministers. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Premier. Yesterday, in question period, when discussing a ban on flavored tobacco, the Premier said, and I quote from Hansard, "We want to ensure that legislation will prevent any tobacco company from finding a way around it, and when we bring in flavored tobacco legislation, there will be no loophole." Just like to ask the Premier a simple question. What loophole was in the existing legislation that caused him to drop the ban on flavored tobacco altogether?
The Honourable Premier.
Speaker, we want to... Mr. Speaker, we want to, first of all, thank the Honourable Member for the question. Mr. Speaker, we believe the piece of legislation that's before this House, Mr. Speaker, was put together by so many Nova Scotians, stands by itself. We want to make sure, though, Mr. Speaker, that unlike at the federal conservative level, Mr. Speaker, that there is no way to find for big tobacco to find their way around this piece of legislation. And we have the opportunity, and we have the time to do so, Mr. Speaker, and we're looking forward to making sure that by May 31st, we pass that.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Minister of Health said that the bill is flawed. The Premier said yesterday he wants to make sure there's no loophole. I asked a simple question, what loophole was in the bill that caused him to pull the ban on flavored tobacco, which, by the way, Mr. Speaker, has been described as tasting like warm pancakes but still kills like cancer. I'd like to ask the Premier, what caused the change of heart in the middle of the process here of passing this bill? Or, in other words, who convinced the Premier to pull the ban on flavored tobacco?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to again thank the Honourable Member for the question. Mr. Speaker, what we have before us is the ability to pass legislation around e-cigarettes, Mr. Speaker, that will keep it out of the hands of young Nova Scotians. We will treat it just like tobacco. Business owners, small business owners, need an opportunity to prepare for the fact that they have to conceal that product. Mr. Speaker, they also have to prepare for the fact that advertising is no longer allowed at their premises of work. We believe giving them that window to May 31st is the appropriate window, Mr. Speaker. On top of that, we also have heard from Nova Scotians. We heard from members of the opposition who were, in some cases, unhappy with the piece of legislation that came forward. We want to listen to what they've said. We want to engage Nova Scotians in what they've said. We will bring in a piece of legislation on flavored tobacco, Mr. Speaker, that will deal with the issue, and we'll do it on a timeline that is presented before this House of May 31st.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just want to be clear. Mr. Speaker, the Premier's the king. If you can't have it both ways, well, he can't have it both ways. We're very much in support of the rules as they are proposed on e-cigarettes. No one is disputing that. But the question wasn't even about that. It was about flavored tobacco, where we actually believe there should be a ban, and the government has withdrawn that ban. But we're not the only ones that believe there should be a ban now, Mr. Speaker. The Canadian Cancer Society thinks that. Doctors Nova Scotia thinks that. Smoke-free Nova Scotia thinks there should be a ban now, and so do many of our community health boards. But the government wants to take more time, Mr. Speaker. Well, we think this is something to be fixed now. We put a very reasonable amendment forward to actually put that ban back in place. Premier wants to consult more people, but beyond all of those groups, Mr. Speaker, it just leads to the question, who else does the Premier possibly need to talk to before he does the right thing and puts the ban back on flavored tobacco?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank again the Honourable Member for the question. I want to remind all members of this House that we have before us a piece of legislation that will deal with e-cigarettes. We have an opportunity to ensure that we close all of the loopholes, Mr. Speaker, in and around flavored tobacco. That we listen to the concerns that were brought forward by the opposition members, that we vote and listen to Nova Scotians. We can ensure that we bring in an airtight piece of legislation that will ensure we protect young Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker, from flavored tobacco, and that is exactly what we're going to do, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, yesterday the President of the College of Family Physicians of Canada called for action on home care. Dr. Gary Mazowieta, President of the College, said he had seen firsthand the health of older patients decline in hospital on waiting lists, and he said, and I quote, "Their function and mental well-being would have been better maintained and often even improved had adequate home care been available." So my question, Mr. Speaker, to the Premier is, does the Premier agree that home care is a good way to improve the well-being of our seniors who are waiting in hospital beds?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yes, that's why we put an extra $30 million in the budget.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I think the actual numbers are smaller than that, Mr. Speaker. It's about $22 million. Mr. Speaker, during last year's election, the Premier said he had a plan to put patients first. The election platform on health care said, and I quote, "When patients end up in hospitals, we need to make sure they return home as quickly as possible." So, Mr. Speaker, we have now learned that in the last 6 months of this Liberal government, the home care list has increased by 80%, Mr. Speaker. So will the Premier please explain how growing wait times for home care and growing numbers of people in hospital beds is keeping their campaign promise to put Nova Scotians first?
The Honourable Premier.
I want to thank Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Member, for this question. We have, Mr. Speaker, the Minister of Health, Department of Health, working with our partners across this province, have been working to move Nova Scotians out of hospital to home. Mr. Speaker, she's seeing some of that growth in lists around looking for home care support. We've recognized there needs to be an investment in home care across this province. We're very pleased with our partners who are working in regions across Nova Scotia to ensure that our parents, our loved ones, get an opportunity to provide, to be home as quickly as possible, provide that support. We know there's more work to do. We've invested in that, and we're going to continue to ensure that we invest in home care support.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, seven of Nova Scotia's former nine district health authorities have experienced a significant increase in the number of people waiting for home care since April. And as a former health minister, I know that it requires daily attention of the health department to ensure people are moved out of hospital and into home care. So my question is this: will the Premier now admit that the focus on DHA amalgamation has taken valuable time and energy away from improving frontline patient care?
The Honourable Premier.
No, I wouldn't, Mr. Speaker. As a matter of fact, I want to thank the Minister of Health, Mr. Speaker, for not only doing the largest restructuring in the health care system in this province to put patients first, Mr. Speaker, I want to also congratulate him for, while he's been doing the hard work that that government wouldn't do, Mr. Speaker, he ensured that we're getting more people from hospitals to home, and we will provide support in the home care system.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, it appears another Liberal election promise is about to go down the tubes. Nova Scotia Power now wants to raise our rates starting in April of 2015. We know that the Liberals are over at the URB desperately trying to delay that increase, even if it means costing ratepayers another $8 million in interest payable to Nova Scotia Power. Mr. Speaker, the consumer advocate says this is, and I quote, buying customers a present with their own money, and I'll table that. My question for the Premier is, why is he trying to buy ratepayers a present with their own money instead of actually lowering rates?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. First of all, let me congratulate the Minister of Energy on the tremendous work he's been doing on behalf of all Nova Scotians in this province. Speaker, I want to thank the Minister of Energy, Mr. Speaker, for sending a message to the Utility Review Board to ensure that the savings, when we remove the NDP electricity tax off power bills, ends up in the pockets of Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker. Speaker, instead of spending 8 hours in this house ringing bells, it might have been more useful for the leader of the Conservative Party to go down there and add his voice to the fact that he believes that money should stay in the pockets of Nova Scotians as well, and not in the pockets of Nova Scotia Power.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, perhaps the Premier should congratulate the ratepayers of Nova Scotia for their patience while his government flip-flops trying to twist themselves into pretzels to keep an election promise that they obviously can't keep, because our rates are going to go up in 2015 after all, Mr. Speaker, and he knows it. And so does the chair of the Utility and Review Board, who said, and I quote, the party who benefits the most from the delay that the government wants, plus interest, is the shareholder of Nova Scotia Power, in other words, Emera, because they will collect carrying costs, in other words, interest, at 7.8%. Well, what Nova Scotian would not want to earn 7.8%, but the Liberals are okay with that happening for Nova Scotia Power, Mr. Speaker? That's a pretty good return. So I'll ask the Premier, why would he ever agree to a new policy that allows Nova Scotia Power to be the biggest beneficiary?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I would encourage the Leader of the Conservative Party to periodically to stop and listen. Just every once in a while, Mr. Speaker, someone else might have an idea that he doesn't have, Mr. Speaker. And the fact of the matter is, Mr. Speaker, and the fact of the matter is, we're going to take off, Mr. Speaker, the NDP electricity tax. We're going to drive power rates down. And, Mr. Speaker, it would be helpful if they would go to the Utility Review Board, Mr. Speaker, and add their voice to supporting ratepayers and not shareholders.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Health. Yesterday, in trying to explain the 80% increase in home care wait lists, the Minister of Health indicated that he increased the home care budget by over $30 million this year. Reviewing the supplementary budget information, Mr. Speaker, which I'll table, the increase from 2013-14 forecast to the 14-15 estimate is only $22.6 million. That's nearly a quarter short. So would the Minister of Health agree the 80% increase in home care wait lists is due to a quarter percent shortfall in what they had agreed to support home care services this year with?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I'm sure the Honourable Member will know that besides the amount going directly to assist in terms of home care, there are an array of other programs that do support Home First, for example, that there are other programs within the budget that allow for greater care in the home. In fact, one of the areas as we transition from more nursing home beds to care in the home, in fact, is we have reduced the nursing home wait list, and now we need as well to get more providers for home care to make sure that we meet that growing demand.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In the supplementary budget information that I tabled, it shows that home care budget for former Annapolis Valley DHA received 1.2% increase more for home care, but they saw their increase in wait lists up 52%. The South Shore District home care budget increased by 1.8%, but they saw their home care wait list increase by over 800%, Mr. Speaker. In the Chronicle Herald, on the home care wait list, the minister yesterday indicated that he doesn't see it is as a dramatic increase, Mr. Speaker. So through you, Mr. Speaker, to the Minister of Health, if 80% increase in home care wait lists isn't dramatic, what is?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We all know that we can use the statistics in terms of percentages versus actual numbers. We know the list for home care is a very dynamic one, one that, in fact, is constantly changing, in flux. We know that right now we can do better in terms of utilizing all of the dollars provided for home care, and that's where refreshing the continuing care strategy will help us realize that.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is to the Minister of Economic Rural Development and Tourism. Recently, the Minister told the Herald that there is no hard deadline for when it would be too late for the Nova Scotia, for the Nova Star to find an off-season contract. In that same article, a company spokesperson indicated they were hopeful in having an update this week. Can the Minister please tell the House whether the Nova Star Ferry has found winter work?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Mr. Speaker, the company is who bears responsibility for finding work for the vessel during the winter months. It is our understanding that they are continuing to pursue leads as to potential work for the winter months, and as soon as that is secured, they will advise us and return, as we've done since the beginning with this ferry, we will advise Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Minister for his answers. As lobster season approaches in District 34, there are a lot of concerns that the Nova Star is in the way. If there is no plan for winter work, is there a better solution than having a phone number for the fishers to call to remove the lines when they have to go to work and return?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Speaker, I believe it was almost a week ago when I advised Nova Scotians that the company had acknowledged a concern that the mooring lines for the vessel may interfere with the local lobster boats, and as a result of that, that the company was seeking an alternate site for the vessel. I commend the company for recognizing that issue and wanting to continue to have a very good relationship with local fishermen as they prepare for lobster season. I would expect that within the next few days that the vessel will be leaving the port of Yarmouth for another location while it continues to try to secure winter work.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Premier. Contrary to the Premier's talking points when it comes to the sale of flavoured tobacco, his Liberal government policy is anything but progressive, Mr. Speaker. In fact, a jurisdictional review published by the Canadian Cancer Society in April 2014 shows that Alberta has passed a bill banning flavoured tobacco, and Manitoba and Ontario have introduced similar legislation. At a time when much of the country is working towards banning flavoured tobacco, Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotia is heading in the wrong direction. So my question for the Premier is this. If the Premier of Alberta can place a ban on sale of flavoured tobacco, why can't the Premier of Nova Scotia do the same thing?
The Honourable Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I would encourage the member to actually check to see if any of that legislation has actually been proclaimed. What we have laid out before this House is a piece of legislation that we will move forward and remove e-cigarettes, Mr. Speaker, to make sure that we protect young Nova Scotians from those. Speaker, the Honourable Member himself brought forward an amendment to Crossett Law amendments. We believe that amendment should be considered and consulted, and we believe we should talk to Nova Scotians about that. We can do that very consultation, looking at his own amendment, Mr. Speaker. We can do that, and then we can also meet the timeline of May 31st. What more does he want? We're actually listening to them, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I hope the Premier's listening now. By no means did any of us on this side ask him to pull back the ban on flavoured tobacco in the legislation. Not one person on this side, Mr. Speaker. So according to the Canadian Youth Smoking Survey published in October 2013, 49% of youth under the age of 19 who use tobacco in Atlantic Canada prefer flavoured tobacco, Mr. Speaker. The survey found that 1 in 7 males in high school has used flavoured tobacco in the last 30 days. So my question for the Premier is this. Right now, the Premier has a chance to take flavored tobacco products out of the hands of our high school students across Nova Scotia, why won't he amend the legislation and ban flavored tobacco now?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I think the Honourable Member knows that the piece of legislation that talked about flavored tobacco was talking about May 31st. The amendment, he didn't even actually want to change that date, Mr. Speaker. What he was talking about was menthol flavour. We believe we should listen to him, Mr. Speaker. We should believe do it. The unfortunate part, Mr. Speaker, is that one more, Mr. Speaker, it's one more left on piece of business left undone by the former government, and we're going to make sure by May 31st we deal with it.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, red tape is a job killer. I presume that's why this government intends to release its tax and regulatory review at some future date. My question is about the proposed amendments to the workplace health and safety regulations. On page 6, Mr. Speaker, of the draft proposal, there is a formula designed to guide employers regarding hazardous conditions. Mr. Speaker, the formula is C1 over T1 plus C2 over T2 plus C3 over T3 in sequence to CN over TN. Now, Mr. Speaker, I'll table that formula. Mr. Speaker, my question to the minister. Most employers care about the safety of their employees and want to cooperate within the rules. Will the Minister of Labour please explain how imposing such a complicated formula like the one I just tabled keeps workers safer?
The Honourable Minister of Labour.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Honourable Member for the question. In fact, that is out for consultation right now, and that's exactly the kind of feedback we want to hear. I know that sometimes the opposition doesn't actually want us to consult, but in fact, in this place, it's a perfect example of of why it's so important to consult. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Mr. Speaker, I had a chance to consult with some of the employers, and they looked at that formula and threw their hands up in the air. However, Mr. Speaker, many small and medium-sized businesses in Nova Scotia are already struggling under the weight of the highest taxes and power rates in the country and a complicated regulatory regime. Changes to regulations that include difficult formula will not ease that burden. My question to the minister, will the minister help job creators create safer workplaces by consulting and working with them rather than imposing expensive and confusing new regulations?
The Honourable Minister of Labour.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In fact, just the other day, one of my colleagues came back to me after meeting with a businessman, and he said that the attitude in the Department of Labour in our safety branch has done a complete 360, that the people who are working in that department, in that branch, are so committed to safety and so committed to helping businesses make sure their workers are safe. He said he wanted to pass along the message to me that, in fact, it's been a huge turnaround, and I do want to thank those workers for the work they're doing. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is to the Minister of Environment. Mr. Speaker, yesterday I asked the Minister of Environment about a pilot program that is taking place in the western region of the province. I have emails here from staff in his department regarding it. Unfortunately, the minister wasn't aware of the program and couldn't answer my question at that time. So I'll try again, Mr. Speaker. Can the Minister of Environment please explain the pilot program that has been going on for 3 months and prohibits MLAs from filing complaints on behalf of their constituents?
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member opposite for raising this question. I guess, first and foremost, this particular initiative is not about preventing MLAs from doing their job at all. Quite the contrary, Mr. Speaker. What we're intending to do here, if you look at it in terms of affecting our constituency offices, as the member seems to be most concerned with, is actually the way, and I may be a rookie, maybe I don't understand my job fully in my constituency office, Mr. Speaker. The member opposite has more experience, but I know that in my job, when environment issues come to my constituency office, I direct them down the hall so that we can have the individuals bring the information firsthand to our staff. If people are having issues, Mr. Speaker, with how our office is handling those complaints or issues or information being brought forward, that's something that needs to be escalated, certainly. And that's something I would look forward to hearing from my members, all members across this in this House on behalf of their constituents. But for actual reported incidences, Mr. Speaker, we want to get that information firsthand so we can make better decisions.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's.
Thank you for the answer to the Minister, but the Minister is missing the point that many people are fearful to come forward, especially in rural Nova Scotia, and to refuse an MLA to bring that information is just wrong. This pilot program also means that anonymous tips will no longer be worthy of investigation from people of the province. Many people, especially in close-knit rural communities, are hesitant to have their name included when reporting incidents involving their neighbours, co-workers, or employers. I've been told by staff in his department, I have the emails here if the minister would like to see them, that inspectors are keeping track of how many times they are informed of an issue but unable to investigate it because of these new rules. My question to the minister is, in the months since these new rules have been in place, how many reported infractions have gone uninvestigated?
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Mr. Speaker, again, I thank the member for bringing this issue forward. What I'd like to advise the member and all members of the public in the Western region, I think first and foremost is the importance of why this initiative is taking place on a pilot process. Rather than rolling out bad policy and bad initiatives across the province of Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker, under this government, under this department, we're engaging in a pilot initiative so that we can identify where there may be some challenges in what we are proposing and moving forward as enhancements to how we do business, Mr. Speaker, so we can do a better job protecting our environment, which I've heard frequently from people from one end of this province to the other. They think that we can do a better job. This is an initiative that we're working on doing that, Mr. Speaker, and we're taking into consideration, we're tracking the data so we can make informed decisions, Mr. Speaker, as to the effectiveness of this pilot project. And if it needs to make adjustments to make it better, then Mr. Speaker, we'll be doing that before we look at moving it forward across the province.
The Honourable Member for Northside Westmount.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is to the Minister of Public Service Commission. Last week, I asked the Minister about the cost of a new February holiday with regard to civil servants. Mr. Speaker, I'll quote from Hansard's answer. Nova Scotia has the least amount of holidays in Canada, and the province that have the most, Alberta and Saskatchewan, actually have the most booming economies in Canada. And Mr. Speaker, that's not even logical. The Minister is ignoring our deficit and saying that if we had more holidays, we could have a better economy. So my question to the Minister, can the Minister explain how legislating a paid public holiday forcing small businesses to delve deeper into their pockets for wages will give us a booming economy?
The Honourable Minister of the Public Service Commission.
Mr. Speaker, I stand by what I said. Those provinces do have more holidays than we do, and they have much more booming economies. Mr. Speaker, when people are working, we can increase their productivity by giving them breaks. And this is what it is. It's a break, and it will increase productivity of Nova Scotians. And I truly believe that it will move Nova Scotia in a positive direction. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Northside Westmount.
Mr. Speaker, maybe the Minister should try creating jobs instead of creating holidays from the few jobs that we do have. Mr. Speaker, when I asked about a hiring freeze in the civil service, the Minister said, there is no hiring freeze. I don't know why the opposition keeps going there. On page 4 of the Finance Minister's briefing book, it says there is a 1-to-2 ratio hiring freeze. And I'll table that, Mr. Speaker. The Minister obviously did not have the information included in his own briefing book. So my question to the Minister is, can the Minister confirm whether or not there is a hiring freeze within his own department or not?
The Honourable Minister of the Public Service Commission.
Mr. Speaker, filling half of our positions is not a hiring freeze. A hiring freeze is filling none of our vacant positions. Mr. Speaker, I'd also like to add, as an entrepreneur in Nova Scotia, having owned various companies, I have hired Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker, and I have created jobs. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
That's what he's looking for. Oh, how you doing, Mr. Speaker? My question
is for the minister, the Acting Minister of Service Nova Scotia Municipal Relations. In a recent provincial municipal fiscal report, recommendation 13 and 14 suggest that the minister should abolish all 22 villages in Nova Scotia. This came as a shock, Mr. Speaker, to those villages, as they were the only ones left out of the consultation for creating this report. So I'd like to ask the Acting Minister, does the Acting Minister and her government think it's fair that the harshest recommendation in that report is targeted at the only group that weren't consulted?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. I think it's an important question. It's important that every member of this province recognize that that piece of paper that was brought out was a piece of paper for consultation. Mr. Speaker, I have said to villages across this province, the same as I have said to towns and municipalities, this government will not force anyone to amalgamate, but we will work with communities who want to amalgamate.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm sure there's some comfort in those words and that commitment from the Minister, or from the Premier, sorry. But why? The question is, why were they not allowed to be part of creating that report? The Lawrencetown Village Commission said in a recent article that the government move is narrow-minded, ill-conceived approach. And I'll table that, Mr. Speaker. The New Minas Village Commission said these two recommendations around villages come completely out of left field. It's almost as if they had a blank page and said, well, we've got to put something there. And I'll table that, or I just did, Mr. Speaker. So I would like to ask the Premier, why wouldn't the Premier now indicate to those villages that that recommendation will not even be considered in future endeavours on the fiscal management review that was done?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to correct something that the Minister said. Mr. Speaker, this was a document put together by municipalities. Mr. Speaker, it was chaired by the Chair of the UNSM, Mayor Corkum. They laid out these recommendations. They weren't accepted or endorsed by the government at all. They were put out for a consultation piece. But I want to remind all members of this House that it has been this government that has made it very clear we will not be forcing municipalities to amalgamate in any part of this province, Mr. Speaker, but we will work with municipalities across this province who want to do so, Mr. Speaker, and that includes villages. Mr. Speaker, that includes villages. I don't know why the honourable member is afraid to take for the fact we've given him an answer. Fact of the matter is, villages will not be forced to amalgamate.
The Honourable Member for Sydney River, Myra Lewisburg.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you will be to the Minister of TIR. The Tarco McLean Ferry was taken to dry dock for scheduled repairs in mid-July, and it was supposed to be there for 10 weeks and be back in service by the end of September. That date came and passed, and then it was said it would be the end of October. Now, last week, our minister said that it was hopeful it would be by mid-November. So my question is, on what date can the people of Victoria County expect the Torkel McLean to be back in service?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I'd like to thank the member for the question. The Torkel McLean is undergoing dry dock inspection and dry dock enhancements, Mr. Speaker, being performed by AECON, which is a great Nova Scotia success story in terms of industry and sector building here, and they're great shipbuilders, they're great ship contractors, so we're happy to have them doing the work. The reality is, Mr. Speaker, on the project, safety is number one, first and foremost, no questions asked. So when we take a vessel like the Torkel McLean out of service, we do it full inspection, make sure that everything is perfect. It's our busiest ferry. It's the most active ferry that we have in the province in terms of vehicle passengers and overall traffic. So for us, we've got to get it right. We have the Scotian in place, Mr. Speaker. There's absolutely zero interruption in service. The Scotian is doing a good job. When the Torkel McLean is ready, it'll be back in the water, but only when it's safe to do so. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Sydney River, Myra Lewisburg.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I want to thank the Minister for that response. But the closer we get to winter, the more dangerous it becomes to tow the ferry back to its location. And on October the 2nd, the Minister said unexpected repairs have cost the project an extra $280,000 over the original tender price of $776,000. Now, it's more than 6 weeks behind schedule, and there's still no service date in sight. I wonder if the minister could tell us what unexpected repairs are causing the ongoing delays and the cost overruns.
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Mr. Speaker, I'm certainly not an expert in shipbuilding or ship repair, but I know that I have access to people who are. John McCravich in our department is an expert in ferry services, in ferry maintenance, and know-how. He's the lead on this. I trust him wholeheartedly. He does a good job, and he gets accurate information and does what he can to support the services of our ferries. At the end of the day, Mr. Speaker, the Torquay McLean will be back in the water when it's safe. No question about it. The tug from AE Conn Shipyard down to the Englishtown Ferry is certainly can be a tough one. Weather plays a factor, no question. When we can get the vessel there, it will be there. But I want to ensure all Nova Scotians, particularly those living in the Englishtown area who rely on that vessel, that the Scotian's doing a great job. There's no service interruptions, and there will not be any service interruptions. So thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Sydney River Myra Lewisburg.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question again will be to the Minister of TIR, and it's the people of the Taniquk Islands are essentially stuck as they are wait for repairs on the William G. Ernst Ferry. Residents on that island have expressed frustration as the ferry's disrepair may negatively impact on the lobster season, which is to start shortly. So here we have another ferry problem in Nova Scotia. It seems with this government, if it floats, it's in doubt. What assurances can the minister provide the people on Taniquk Islands that this ferry will be operational in time for the lobster season?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Mr. Speaker, the officials in our department are working on the Ernst to see what the timeline looks like. I want to mention that the MLA for Chester St. Margaret's, along with the MLA for Lunenburg, have worked together on this issue. Mr. Speaker, I want to be very clear. This is a significant issue. The people of the Taniquks, they rely on this service. It's their mode of transportation back to the mainland. So there's nothing more important with respect to our ferry services than to make sure there is a vessel in the water. Currently, we have a charter vessel that's looking after the passenger traffic. My understanding is that their capacity is over and above what the average traffic is for those runs, so that's important to know that the service is covered. Also, Mr. Speaker, with the respect to the lobster fishery, there's issues with fuel and issues getting bait over to the islands. My understanding, Mr. Speaker, is that we have that covered from the logistical point. I'm certainly open to any information that suggests the contrary. We've got to get those materials to the islands as soon as possible. So for us, it's about passenger traffic. We understand the frustrations, Mr. Speaker, but we're going to keep that service, and now we're going to do what we can. Thank you.
Yeah. Honourable Member for Sydney River, Myra Lewisburg.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I want to thank the Minister for that response, that long response. Mr. Speaker, the people of Taniquk Islands had received assurances that the Scotian Ferry would be in standby to provide services, and I'll table that document. Yet, the Scotian is still needed to service Englishtown, and then as that ferry goes under the repairs that it's needed for the Torquay McLean. So some of the island people have expressed concerns that even when the William G. Ernst Ferry's engine is repaired, it may not pass Transport Canada's stability test that has failed earlier this year. So my final question to the Minister is, will the Minister inform the host what the long-term plan is for providing ferry services to the people of Taniquk Islands?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Thank you again, Mr. Speaker, and I want to assure the member, I want to assure the member for MLA St. Margaret's, the MLA for Lunenburg, Chester St. Margaret's, that this is an important service. This is their mode of transportation. It's how those folks get to the mainland. So obviously it's a priority, Mr. Speaker. We have 7 ferry runs in this province. Those that are mandatory, obviously, for transportation, we have to look after those needs. We have 9 vessels. Currently, the Scotian is replacing the Torquay McLean, Mr. Speaker. At the end of the day, we're going to find a way to get service to the people of the Taniquks. We have to look after Nova Scotians. We'll certainly do that. We're going to participate in a committee that's going to be formed by the MLAs here in the legislature that are impacted by the Taniquk Ferry service, and we're going to do the right thing. We're going to be honest. We're going to give the people of the area all the information that we have, and we'll allow them to give input, and we'll make the best decision that has their interests in mind. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And my question is also to the Minister of Transportation, Infrastructure and Renewal. And Mr. Speaker, as the Minister knows and has said, that the Taniquk Ferry is a vital transportation link for the people who live in my constituency on the island. And he also knows that the ferry has been tied up for repairs. The Minister of Transportation has hired a temporary ferry called the Eastern Points, But residents of Tangkok Island are telling the minister that it is an insufficient band-aid. There are businesses that rely on proper ferry service to transport their goods on a daily basis, something that can't be facilitated by that boat. Given that this is one of the most important times of the year for businesses on Tangkok Island, why did the minister hire a boat that can't support the business needs and also the personal needs of Tangkok residents?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And certainly for the member opposite, I would appreciate any update on information that supports what she just said. From my department officials who were on the ground there, John Mikroyevich in particular, he says there's three issues that have been brought forward by the residents. There's an issue of fuel, there's an issue of bait, and first and foremost, there's an issue of passenger traffic, Mr. Speaker. What I'm being informed through our officials is that there's adequate service to get the bait over, there's adequate service to get the fuel over, and there's the average passenger number per trip is certainly being able to accommodate it by that current charter vessel. So, Mr. Speaker, the information I have is that that service is adequate. If that's not the case, then by all means, I would invite the member to bring forward the new information to my attention, and we'll look after it. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's.
Thank you to the Minister for his answer. One of the parts the minister is missing is the fact that people that live there need oil and other items for them to be able to exist on the island, and the whaler does not have the capacity to take those items over. And there's small businesses that are being really affected now, like during the lobster season. And if the decision to hire the Eastern Points as the temporary ferry service leads to revenue losses for businesses on Tangkok Island, how will the minister help those residents, business residents, recoup their losses retroactively?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Mr. Speaker, thank you very much. I have heard, other than the three areas that were mentioned with the fuel, the bait, and the passenger capacity, I haven't heard of any other issues and interruptions with providing goods and services to Tangkok. So that's something certainly that I haven't been briefed on, and if the member can provide the specifics on that, I'd certainly appreciate that. If there's something that's not getting to the island, Mr. Speaker, then we've got to get it there. It's our duty on behalf of Nova Scotians. So we'll make sure that's done. But Mr. Speaker, there is a committee established. We will certainly participate. With respect to these issues, with respect to where we go in the future with this vessel, Mr. Speaker, we're wide open. We want to help people in Nova Scotia, so we'll listen to their input, and we'll do it. Make our best path to get there. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton Centre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is to the Minister of Justice. Mr. Speaker, I'm wondering today what this government is doing to protect citizens against crime. You know, we've seen this government work around getting drunk drivers back on the road. We've seen the minister not being crews to address concerns of sexual assault, Mr. Speaker. The truth hurts, I guess, Mr. Speaker. Yeah. So, Mr. Speaker, with that said, crime statistics are going up. So a simple question to the minister is, what is her government doing to protect citizens of Nova Scotia against serious crime?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I thank the Honourable Member for the question. It's a very, very, very excellent question, and I'm very happy to respond to you and tell you what we are doing in the province of Nova Scotia. I'm going to list a few things for you until the Speaker tells me to stop. But Safer Communities and Neighbourhoods Act has been very effective in this province. It's been effective in shutting down properties that adversely affect the surrounding neighbourhood through drugs, illegal activities, so on. We have the Civil Forfeiture Act, which you may or may not be aware of. It's very effective in this province.
I'd just like to remind the Honourable Minister not to refer to the member opposite directly, to put your comments through the chair, and to work towards wrapping it up. The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Very difficult to wrap it up because really there's quite a few things that we're doing in this province and I think we should know. Maybe a statement. So we have the Civil Forfeiture Act also. It's been very effective in the province, and it's there to seize proceeds and goods like cars or other things from crime. We have the ceasefire that we launched back in the spring, which has been a very effective in Halifax to combat crime, which is, I think, what the Honourable Member has been talking about. It's the release of the stats that were received today. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton Centre.
Thank you. Whenever you're... Yeah, you can copy. I guess, well, good then. So, Mr. Speaker, I'll probably then give another piece of legislation that the minister should talk about, and that is the mental health court, Mr. Speaker. But you know what? That's the group in the justice system that is sadly hurt, Mr. Speaker. Despite proof that the mental health court is working, this minister has instead decided to side with the Premier and the Minister of Health and not expanding it. So I want to ask this minister, why is she siding with her political bosses instead of the mental health issues that face the people of Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. The mental health court is very, very, it's one that is very dear to my heart. It's one that I very much believe in, quite frankly, when it first started years and years ago. We have various specialty courts in this province, as we all know. We do have mental health court is a specialty court. It is set up in Dartmouth. It serves all of Halifax Regional Municipality residents. But we do have various initiatives throughout the province of Nova Scotia that also serve the residents of Nova Scotians throughout the province. We have the Monitor Drug Treatment Program in Kentville. We also have another program. There's been a pilot that's been talked about in a couple of other areas in the province of Nova Scotia. I'd be happy to give the Honourable Member or anyone else any information they would like on that. Thank you very much.
Honourable Member for Inverness.
Speaking of my questions for the Minister of Justice, there is no doubt there will be costs for the February holiday to the Department of Justice. Recently, the Minister of Finance said that health authorities will absorb the cost of the holiday for that department. Can the Minister of Justice explain how the department will absorb the cost of the new February holiday?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. The issue of the February holiday has been discussed in this House by the Honourable Members around here for about a decade. In fact, one of the members that happens to be our current Minister of Finance. So this is certainly has not been a surprise to any of the Nova Scotians. For sure, it was a commitment platform, and I'm very pleased that we brought it forth. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Well, Mr. Speaker, the government members can clap all they want, but we know about the safety issues that have been happening at facilities like Burnside, and this could end up compromising safety of people working at Burnside. So, Mr. Speaker, earlier in the week, the minister told us that safety of offenders and of personnel at provincial jails is a priority. Of course, that means having the appropriate number of staff in these institutions at all times. Will the minister assure the House that safety of offenders and staff at provincial jails will not be jeopardized to pay for the February holiday?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and thank you to the Honourable Member. Thank you to everybody in this House. Absolutely, we will assure that. That's what we're here to do. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is to the Premier. Recently, the Minister of Municipal Affairs released the draft recommendations in the Provincial Municipal Fiscal Review Report. The recommendations were drafted by the Fiscal Review Committee, which I understand is made up of civil service and municipal officials. If adopted, the recommendations mean some big changes for Nova Scotia's 22 villages. Will the Premier please explain why the villages are not represented on the Fiscal Review Committee?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. As he knows, that document that was put out is put out for a consultation piece. He also knows, Mr. Speaker, we're very clear that we will not force municipalities to amalgamate. Mr. Speaker, even they could draw the conclusion we will not force villages to amalgamate, Mr. Speaker. If there are communities, though, that want to find cooperations and amalgamate, we will support them. I happen to live in one of them, the town of Bridgetown, which I represent, I grew up in. It's an important part of my life, has decided that it wants to dissolve and become part of the county. We're doing all we can to usher that transition in for the residents who live in that town.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to thank the Premier for that answer. I have in my hand, which I will table from the village of Lawrencetown, another village which the Premier may be familiar with, in Annapolis County, which was signed by seven village commissioners. And in this response to the UNSM Fiscal Review, The villages are upset that it was suggested that they are low-hanging fruit available for amalgamation, which they believe is the village of Lawrencetown believes is an insult to Nova Scotia's long-standing roots in the principles of democracy. No villages were included in the fiscal review process. I will ask the Premier, will Nova Scotia's 22 villages have a seat at the table in the discussion of their future?
The Honourable Premier.
Speaker, I want to remind the Honourable Member that all Nova Scotians can engage and provide feedback on the document that's gone on in consultation. I do know the village of Lawrencetown well. I also represent that village, Mr. Speaker. As a matter of fact, I spent Remembrance Day there laying a wreath on behalf of the citizens of Nova Scotia. One of the things that the citizens of Nova Scotians know, Mr. Speaker, they may not have been consulted by municipal leaders across this province, but they know that their MLA and the Premier of this province will represent them extremely well themselves.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Minister of Finance. Mr. Speaker, the federal government recently announced that it's going to introduce income splitting for Canadians in 2015, and there have been quite a few studies done on income splitting and who will benefit. My question to the Minister of Finance is whether or not she has had an opportunity to examine which Nova Scotian families will benefit from the federal government's plan to income split.
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I appreciate the question. In fact, I haven't had a breakdown of that. I've been here listening to bells ringing and working with others here, talking about important bills as well. Mr. Speaker, the income splitting that's coming in federally was a concern to us in case it would affect the tax base that we also have. I'm not endorsing their plan by any means, but I'm glad to say it doesn't affect our revenue base because it's coming in as a credit against the federal tax owing. So that was a relief to us because we could have stood to lose millions of dollars in revenue if it had been brought in a different way.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the Broadband Institute have done a study on income splitting, and it shows that over 90% of Nova Scotian families will not benefit from this policy, which I'll table. I know the Minister has been very enthusiastic about other federal government initiatives like the pooled pension plans, and she hasn't been an advocate for improving the Canada Pension Plan. So I want to ask the Minister if at some time in the future when she's been briefed, if she will be informing the House of what this government's position is with respect to income splitting.
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And as I said in my first answer, this won't affect the revenue of our province, so it's really a decision of the federal government. It will affect some Nova Scotians. And as the member opposite has just said, it will be a small segment of the Canadian population, so I would assume it's only a small section or segment of our Nova Scotia population.
Order, please. Time allotted for oral questions by members to ministers has expired. The Honourable Government House Leader.
Speaker, I move that you do now leave the chair and that the House resolve itself into a committee of the whole on bills.
The House will now resolve itself into the committee of the whole House on bills. The House will recess for 1 minute while we get ready.